You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
Johnny Carson reigned as the king of late-night TV for three decades. Ever since first stepping onto the Tonight Show stage in 1962, Johnny and those who followed quickly became household names.
As more and more people tuned in to late-night TV for a humorous spin on the news, TV hosts got to shape what Americans thought and talked about.
In fact, our next guest, a veteran late-night TV show writer, says a lot of the nation's cultural and political discourse has been shaped by late-night TV.
With us now is John Max. He was the top writer for the Tonight Show for 22 years. He's the author of Monologue, What Makes America Laugh Before Bed. John, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here, and I love the fact that you played a Here's Johnny. I thought it was about me. I was very excited when I heard that.
Here's Johnny Max.
There you go.
Well, you worked on late-night TV. You wrote for late-night TV a couple decades plus. What makes late-night television and those monologues so influential in shaping, you know, what we're talking about, what we think about the news?
Yeah, I mean, I call it the, it's really a three-parter. I mean, the first one is it amplifies. You see a small story, something in the news, it's funny to a comedy writer, it goes on late night TV, whether it's on Dave or Jay or Johnny or any of the Jimmys or whoever, and it's amplified. All of a sudden, something that might have been in a local scandal or a local story becomes national. The second thing it does is it filters. I mean, in this day and age when we have how many news stories crossing our desk, how many, this alert just coming in on our smartphones, it gives a way to, you know, the 25 jokes or the 10 topics that a late night show puts on the air. In essence, those late night hosts are filtering it down to saying, these are things that are of interest that you might be interested in. And the other thing, and the final thing it does, and this is especially true with politics, is it paints a picture. I mean, I was listening to your broadcast earlier talking about Scott Walker. And, you know, very few people nationwide know about Scott Walker. If the late night hosts start to paint him as this person or that person, that may take hold. And we've seen that time and time again.
Now, you said that this take on the news, taking it, packaging it, figuring out what people want to hear, is something that wasn't always obvious, that Johnny Carson is kind of the guy who figured that out and ran with it. What made him sort of the king of the monologue?
He invented the monologue as we know it today. His predecessors of the Tonight Show, Steve Allen and Jack Parr. Steve Allen was more sketches and bits, and Jack Parr was more conversation and stories. But Johnny is the one, starting in 1962 with his very first joke, which is actually about former Vice President Richard Nixon, that it became about the people in the news. It became about public figures. And he made that, and since he was the one, he was the king. He was, a number of people came up to try to take the throne, but Johnny really dominated. And we got used to, as Americans, to watching a monologue and expecting that person. Plus the fact he was a Midwesterner and he kind of spoke for the whole country. It wasn't one skewed, West Coast, East Coast point of view. He kind of, he represented every man. And every woman. And I think that's what made it so powerful and influential.
As a writer of these monologues, what is it that tripped your radar? What were you looking for that said, this is the twist on politics, or this is the obscure story that's going to make a good monologue line?
For the bigger stories, I was always looking about for two things, especially when it came to a politician or celebrity. I would always look for, what's stupid about this? What did they do stupid? Or what did they do hypocritical? You know, a politician who rants and raves about returning moral values to our schools who then gets caught with, three sheep and a woman not his wife, okay, that's hypocrisy. And in terms of the small stories, the day, I'd always look for just the obscure people, the funny people, the man in Belgium, I used to call it, who got caught, hugging a tree, and was arrested. I'd look for the odd things that we'd all laugh at. So I always try to make the jokes about public figures go up to those more powerful or richer than us. And when it would go for someone not more powerful or richer, it would be the odd story, somebody who's a little bit odder than and out of the norm.
We're talking right now with veteran writer John Max about late night TV's influence on American life and American culture. We're going to fast forward now. Here's a clip from The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, where he's writing out his famous thank you notes.
But anyways, do you guys mind if I write out some weekly thank you notes? Is that cool? You guys are the best. James, take us some thank you note writing music, please. Thank you. Summer barbecues.
for being a great way to invite some friends over for a fun afternoon of not knowing when to ask people to leave. Thank you, Sliced Bread, for coming out the same year that the television was invented. But let's go with you being the best thing to happen since 1928.
So one of the Johnny Carson successors there, Jimmy Fallon, interesting thing about him, you say he sort of talks less than any of the other hosts. What do you make of that?
What I do is Jimmy knows his strength. I admire him so much is he's taken the show that existed really for since 1962, and that Johnny started and that Dave and Jay took, you know, took over, and he's made it his own. He knows his strengths, and his strengths are sketch, variety, comedy. He's not going to do a 25-joke monologue like Jay. He's not going to go do, a monologue in a top 10 list like Dave. He knows what his strengths are, and when he has what I call great renewable bits. You have to feed the monster. You're doing, 240 shows a year or whatever. You have to keep those jokes coming. And when he has a thank you note, when he has a lip sync battle, when he has two, celebrities playing Pictionary or slow jamming the news, he's got great renewable bits that are really entertaining.
So the game is different now. Johnny Carson was the one you watched, I guess, back in the day. Now all the networks have their late night talk shows, and there are more networks, cable networks too, and lots of other viewing options. How has that changed what we're seeing at night?
Oh, well, first of all, we're the only three people, the two of you and me, that don't have a late night show right now. And it's a little upsetting, but I suspect we will all get one. What's happened is this. I mean, with Johnny, you had, 10, 12 million people watching, and with Dave and Jay, you had, 4 and 5 million. Now, Jimmy probably has about 4 million watching at night, but what you have is you have options for everyone. If you want to get, a more political monologue, and political jokes, you're going to watch Bill Maher. If you want to see more sketch comedy, and variety and great celebrity interaction, you're going to watch Jimmy Fallon. If you want to watch a monologue, you're going to watch more traditional, you're going to watch a Seth Meyers or Conan O'Brien. There's really something, there's something for everyone. We have, it's the old 500 choices. They used to say 500 channels and nothing on. Well, in this case, you've got, 10, 15 hosts, and there's a lot on to watch.
Okay, so talking politics some more, you say that a crowd's response to late-night TV jokes a week before an election can predict its outcome. Really?
I always say that voters are really smart and the audiences are really smart. And what you would do is this. I would watch our audience and I would watch the reaction to jokes. And when a politician's name is in the setup, that's one thing. When the politician's name becomes the punchline, when it's a joke about something totally different, and then somehow it ends up being a joke about an Al Gore, and that's the punchline, or years past before that, a Dan Quayle, that's really bad. And I'm never forgetting 2008. It was right after the Democratic convention, the Republican convention was coming up, and Barack Obama was kind of an unknown, and you could see people were laughing more at the name. They're not because the name is not, it's not Jim Smith, but the idea of he and Biden, it was people, you could tell they were laughing, they were a little unsure. And then September 15, 2008, John McCain comes out with a statement that the economy is fundamentally sound the day that Lehman Brothers collapses and the economy goes in a tank. And all the late night hosts, went wild on that. And you could just tell that the audiences were laughing. You'd mention John McCain's name and they go, yeah, he's just not who we want as president. And you could tell then that the numbers were going to start to slip for him and the Obama rocket took off.
Does it ever go too far? Do you hit a point where you're caricaturing someone, piling on, and it's disproportionate to the laughability of, say, a politician?
My theory in that, Rob, is this, that if the audience doesn't laugh, you're just not going to do those jokes. You've got, with the people that host these shows, you've got the best in the world. And they're not going to try to sell something that you're not buying. So, again, I can't sell you a joke that Stephen Hawking's not smart. And, but I can sell you a joke. I can tell a joke that's going to lift that maybe Sarah Palin's not really ready for discussing foreign policy on a world level. That's believable. And if you go too far, if you stretch it too much, it's not going to get the laugh. Plus, one thing about Jay, he had what I call the mafia rule. He never touched the family. So Bill and Hillary Clinton were always good, but Chelsea Clinton was off limits.
Well, as we look ahead to whatever's coming next in Late Night, what do you consider the last sort of undiscovered countries in Late Night, briefly here?
Undiscovered country by as in areas to tap? Well, I mean, to me, it's I am still befuddled by the fact, and I never use the word befuddled, but I just used it there, by the fact that there's no woman hosting a late night show. There, you know, I love Wanda Sykes when she had a show a few years ago. I can't understand why she doesn't have a show now. Amy Schumer is one of the great talents in comedy. I think she's fantastic. I know she does have a show, but I'd love to see her have a show in a traditional talk show. You know, Amy Poehler. I mean, Amy makes $7 gazillion a year doing movies and TV, but she'd be fantastic. So to me, that is something that I was really stunned that a woman wasn't named either to take over The Daily Show or to take over for Letterman. And so basically, I'm waiting for when Chelsea Handler comes back on the air.
John, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thank you so much.
We've been speaking to John Max, the top writer for The Tonight Show, for 22 years. His book is called Monologue.